Welcome to the Making Up the Numbers podcast. The Making Up the Numbers podcast is sponsored by Hope Technology, Revolution Bike Park, and the world's finest independent mountain bike magazine, Single Track.
Hello and welcome to a very special Making Up the Numbers podcast. It's been National Champs weekend here in the UK, and after racing all weekend, it's now Monday afternoon, and I'm back at Revolution Bike Park again. Why, you might ask? Well, the senior men's sleeve stayed in the family. Matt Walker won it last season, Danny Hart yesterday, and an opportunity came up to sit down and have a chat with Madison Saracen team manager, Will Longdon. Afternoon, Will.
Afternoon.
First thing to say, really, is congratulations. Did you have a few beers last night, or are you already thinking about Val d'Isol?
Already thinking about Val d'Isol, I think, really. We've got, we have a team experience day. That's why we've stayed down at Revolution Bike Park. And then, yeah, off to Val d'Isol on Sunday. So it's pretty much home, reload the truck, yeah. And then go again. Yeah.
I believe Alex also won out in Spain.
He did, yeah. And because we're here, we didn't have a phone signal. So I took my phone up to the top of the hill when I went up for qualifying for Jordan's qualifying run, and I saw then that Alex had qualified fastest, and it wasn't till sort of 7 p.m. at night that we got the messages through and saw that he'd won as well. So yeah, two national champions,
yeah,
on the team.
Well chuffed.
Yeah, it was a great weekend.
So
yeah.
Last year up in Glencoe, some of the teams gave national champs a miss, but you guys were out in full force. Matt won that one. We don't see you on a downhill bike much anymore, but you always compete at champs. It's obviously important to you.
Yeah, I think I come from a kind of traditional cycling background, did cyclocross and road when I was younger, and it was always, to be national champion was a real thing of pride, and I think it goes back also to Jason McCroy, and it was something that was important to him, and my era of riders, that national title, being the champion of your country, was a thing to be proud of, you know, and I think it still is for a lot of the riders, but the schedule is a little bit different now, and they have to prioritise and things like that, but we're a UK team, we've got UK riders. And they're proud to have that now, to have that flag on their arm, you know.
And Danny, am I right in saying that until yesterday he'd won more senior world titles than national ones?
That's right, yeah, that's right. Because he won, I think it was 4 years ago, he won British champs. But it's a difficult one for a rider like Danny, because he'll come to this race and everyone will say he'll win, and everyone will say, oh, well, of course he did. And if he doesn't win, it's like, what happened, you know? Yeah. So that's a funny kind of pressure. It's a different kind of pressure altogether to a World Championships or a World Cup race where there's four or five guys and he's one of them, and he can go for it. And if it happens, it happens, you know? And that makes it sound easy. But
yeah,
it's just a very different sort of pressure for a national championship race. And he dealt with it well yesterday.
So in a race like this, what percentage is Danny running at? Did he treat it like a World Cup?
He did absolutely. Yeah, he went through all the same process as he does. He had his GoPro on. He was looking at lines a little bit. There's not so many lines on a track like this, so a couple of bits. Once he'd decided that, it was all about getting the bike set up right. The conditions were changing. It was raining to start with. It stayed greasy all week, so it was all about getting the bike right and getting up to speed, getting enough runs in. Yeah. Staying fueled up, just the usual process you go through, really. Yeah.
And talk us through what a successful race weekend looks like then. You arrived on Friday?
I actually set off Thursday evening in the truck. We got here first thing Friday morning and set up. We'll get everything out, we'll get all the bikes out. Mechanics will go through them, the lads will do a track walk. And then, you're into practice then, really. And at a national race, practice usually, to start with, is really, really busy. So the lads tend to stay off the hill.
Yeah.
Because it just ends up being a frustration, because they're the faster guys, so they're catching people up that are still learning the track that aren't as good as them. So it's almost fairer for everybody if they stay out of the way for a little bit, which is what they did. They started riding at lunchtime, actually. So they didn't ride until 12, but then they could ride till 6. So.
Yeah.
I think Danny got sort of 8 runs in, something like that. Right. So pretty good, really.
And did they like the track?
They did like it. They had a lot of fun on it. I think it's difficult because there's a lot of different tracks in the UK, and whether you could say you felt like a worthy champion of the country, was that a test of that? Maybe, maybe not. But it's a national championship, so you've got riders of very different abilities, and we appreciate that. And they certainly had a lot of fun riding this track, and I think people who come to Revolution will have a good time riding that as well. Yeah.
We thought it was a great track to ride, but it was quite a hard track to race. Through that middle bit, you'd have grip in one section, but then in another it
Yeah, well, I certainly found out that in the final as well. Yeah, because I didn't do a lot of practice myself. I just ride for fun really now, but Yeah, it was certainly like that. I found myself breaking hard and not slowing down a couple of times and getting out of shape.
Well, we'd come the week before when you guys were out in Leger, yeah, and we'd practiced and we got it dialed. We were really happy with pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And then it rained Thursday. It was bone dry when we were practicing. It rained Thursday, it rained Friday, and it changed the track completely. The forecast was for it to improve throughout the weekend. So what were the guys' strategy? A lot of riders started off on either full or cut spikes, but I heard Danny was on minions from the get-go.
Yeah, from the start, really, all the lads just stayed on minions. Jordan had a little go early on shorties with Max's shorty, but went straight back to the minion. It's a really good tyre, it clears quite well. And here it's quite hard, yeah, and it's greasy on top. So the shorty doesn't work as well on that as the minion does for those boys. And you have to have the skill to do it, but they'll find the more they push on, the more they find the grip, they get the grip. So
yeah,
for us, sort of skating around, going a little bit slower, yeah, and covering the brakes, we don't get a lot of grip, so we need the help and the lower pressures and things like that. But for those boys, they push on and trust that the grip's going to be, yeah, there with that minion tyre.
Is it the DHF or the DHR?
It's DHR, yeah, right, DHR 2, yeah.
And at the Gravity Events race up at Hamsterley earlier this season, I heard a rumour that Danny had 18 wheels ready to go with different spoke tensions and tyres. Is that true or is that just urban myth?
No, that sounds like urban myth.
But, right, okay.
Yeah, could well have been perpetuated by a previous mechanic.
All right, okay. Yeah. So, how many runs did you get in on Saturday, and were you riding the trail bike?
Me, yeah. I rode the aerial, Terrasson aerial trail bike, and it's a real nice trail bike. And I knew it was either that or borrow my old bike,
yeah,
or do whatever. So, and I knew it was just, I just wanted to not go too hard and just have fun. But I did two runs on it and thought, oh, that'll be okay. I'll see how qualifying goes. And then Tim properly handed my ass to me, so yeah. I actually went and borrowed a bike that I'd sold to someone. Said, I can't just borrow your bike, and I had to have a guess it set up. But to be fair, I had a really good run. I properly went for it because I thought I've got to give him a run for his money.
Yeah, yeah.
See him off in style. Gave him a run for his money, but yeah, Tim had a great run rest.
Yeah, he was 7 seconds off after seeding.
Yeah, after seeding he was. Yeah, I think I went 10 seconds faster than in the final that I did in qualifying, but
you look pretty irate though, yeah, when you cross the line.
I was frustrated because there's a corner and a drop, and I'd stopped dead in the corner and had to foot plant and sort of pull the bike round, and I was really untidy in one corner, and I knew then, sort of thing. I kept trying, but I kind of, yeah, knew, oh, if Tim has a clean run, he'll win.
Was that in the middle section? Was it where Titley went down?
I think it was.
Okay, by the way, Titley.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was because I think he shouted to Tim and said, Will messed it up, you can win, so, yeah, something like that. So, yeah. But no, I'm really, really pleased for Tim because he's such a, I know I've known him a long, long, yeah, time. And we always, when we at the top now, we have a really good time and it's a good race. And it's it was nice to have a battle with him.
He's a really nice guy, isn't
he? Yeah, 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 for sure.
So, your boys, you say you think Danny did 8 runs.
Yeah.
When they arrive, do they know today I'm going to do 8 runs, or is it a let's see how we go?
No, at a national race, the queues can change, the amount of, yeah, people on the hill can change. So they know what they want to do, they know what they need to learn from the track, they know how much more speed they think they can get from it. So they'll just judge it through the day like that a little bit. But for them, especially for Danny, it's trying not to get frustrated because he will catch people up pretty much every run. I think out of those 8, he probably had 3 clear runs. So for a lot of people, they're just riding down and, yeah, they're getting all their runs in. For Danny, he had 8 runs, but 3 of those were full runs down the track to try and get the bike set up. So it can be difficult, yeah.
And I don't think I saw either of you, well, any of you, at the Quarry Jam on Saturday night. Were you staying offsite?
No, I was. Danny was offsite. Matt actually went home because he lives sort of 45, 50 minutes away from here. And the rest of us were just in the truck getting things ready for the next day, to be fair. But yeah, we missed out on that one.
On Sunday then, I have to say I was a bit surprised to see Danny on the start ramp at 8:45. He was one of the first people up there for practice. I thought he might let a few people take the grease off.
Yeah, well, I think it just as the situation where he's going to catch people up, the best way to avoid that as, yeah, well is to get up there first so he knows he has a clear track.
Yeah.
And then he knows he's not going to catch anyone. He's not going to be someone on the floor. There's not going to be someone. Quite a lot of people, surprisingly, will look round, see a rider come in and set off before them. And they'll even do that to Danny.
Really?
Yeah, or Matt, or any of the boys. You know, they'll look round. I've had it for years. You know, they see someone coming and think, oh, I don't want to get stuck behind them, but without a thought of who it actually is that they're jumping in front of. So
you see, I'm the opposite.
He gets that quite a lot. He gets that quite a lot, and it can be frustrating. So if he's up there early and he can get one in,
I think he might have been the first man down.
He most likely was. That was his plan anyway.
Yeah, so. I don't think anybody would push in front with it.
I think if they saw him at the top, they'd have the sense to keep out of the way.
So you seeded third on the trail back. Was that a wild ride?
It wasn't actually. I've got to drive the truck down to Italy next week. So it was, I'll see if this is enough. And if it isn't, then we'll have to rethink. But it wasn't enough, was it?
Danny seeded first with a 2:26. Matt was fourth, 4 seconds back.
Yeah.
Were they happy with that?
Matt wasn't happy, no. I mean, he had a fantastic start to the season, sort of beyond his expectations, really. And then, unfortunately, had that crash in Fort William. And he's just coming back to terms after that, really. It can take, give you a knock. And it was a knock at a bad time, because it was before a couple of World Cups in a row. So he's just finding his speed again, finding his confidence again. And a frustrating ride for him all weekend, really. Just not quite getting into his groove like he can on a track like this. So, yeah.
Danny, fastest time of the weekend with a ridiculous 2:25.7.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be holding on to that one anymore.
He makes it look pretty effortless at times.
He does, yeah. I think, it's what he does for a living. He does it pretty well. I think we'll all agree on that.
He does. I was taking photographs on Saturday afternoon and he just seemed to float through some
sections. Yeah, he looked. I know it was just the finish area here watching, but he was really, he really had a good flow of the whole track, I think. He looked relaxed and he looked like he was in control of it, yeah.
So let's just have a little recap on the season up until yesterday. It's going incredibly well, isn't it? Matt won the first national, Danny second. Out to Maribor for the IXS, same result. Matt first, Danny second. Staying in Maribor for the World Cup, Danny second, Matt fifth, his first ever Elite World Cup podium. Alex Marin 28th, and you got the team prize. I bet you were buzzing.
Yeah, it was a great start to the year, and it had been a long winter really, because we'd changed out all the team staff for different circumstances. We'd changed the vehicle. We've got the team truck now instead of the two vans we had before. So there was a lot going on in the background, and we'd sort of pulled almost like pulling a new team together really.
Yeah.
But I think for me, it had made it fresh and something new, and I was sort of excited about trying to make it work. The new mechanics have come in. They were excited to be a part of it, and we'd all just had a couple of trips away in the winter, and Danny and Matt were really sort of pushing each other. And there was a great little rivalry going on there, and that everyone sort of helped drag that along and was part of that. And I think when we got to the first race, I think first rule of sport, beat your teammate, and then second rule, beat everybody else. And it really, start of the year, it really worked well. Yeah, yeah.
So on to the Fort William National, and all the trackside talk was, Matt Walker's absolutely flying. I've just seen Matt Walker come through that section like he's on rails. And then a bit later on, Matt Walker's had a big one. You've been around a long time, Will. You've got a young rider who's absolutely brimming with confidence after his first World Cup podium. Obviously, you didn't see that crash coming, but did it cross your mind that he was riding so fast it might happen?
No, I think just the sport we do, accidents happen. I think it's no more than that, and it's hindsight's a great thing in that we can all look back and say, oh, well, he must have been going too fast, or did this or this or the other. But he's very capable of riding at the speed he was riding at. I was up on the hill, I saw him riding, and it was just Matt at his very best, and that's why he'd been on the World Cup podium the week before. It's as simple as that. It was just an unfortunate crash. And in a place where there was trees and there wasn't a lot of room for error where he crashed. So he's very good, though, at refocusing, sorting out, working on an injury, coming back, and he's just now got to get mentally strong again, get that confidence back, and he'll be back on it. But it was just Matt at his very best, which is always really exciting to watch. Yeah.
I guess when you see a rider who's super confident, you don't really want to bring him down, do you?
No, you're never going to tell a rider to just go steady or be careful or anything like that, because then you will have a rider in bits on the floor. So, yeah, we race down on mountain bikes. He's 20 years old and he's going to go for it.
He's recovered well, though, with 7th at the Fort William World Cup, 13th out in Leagang, and currently 11th in the World Cup standings. If he could finish top 10, would that be a cracking season?
I think that would be a good, given the start of the season, that would be a really good aim. Probably at the start of the year, before we had any races, he'd have been happy with top 20 overall, when we think how young he is. But he had a fantastic start, and then the expectations go up, and Yeah, I'm sure he'd be really happy with top 10 overall if he can just get some good results towards the end of the year now.
Danny's cracked on. Second at Fort William National, fifth at the Fort William World Cup, fourth in Leogang, fifth in Valnord, then on to Leger. Seeded fourth with a 301, and we were all thinking, here we go, first sub three of the day. But it all went a bit wrong. Talk us through what happened.
Yeah, I think, you know, by his own admission, he's never done it before, but he just tried too hard. But it's hard to say that because you don't really have the option now. There's no such thing as having a steady one or having a safe one. You can't do that. You do that and you're outside the top 10. It's as simple as that. Danny's always been consistent, and that's what's got him in the top five and the top three. And sort of his second overall last year as well was consistency. But the other riders now have stepped up, and there's quite, you know, those top five have all been consistent all year. And he knew if he wanted to win, he had to go for it. And he went for it. And it got a little bit untidy at the top of the track. And
is that when it was off camera and he lost four
or five
seconds?
I think you, on the, when you're watching the TV, you see all the open corners on the grass. And for me watching, I knew he was off his line going in. As he went out of sight, he'd dropped high of one line and then low of the rut, which meant he couldn't get back across to turn right as he went out of sight. And he blew that turn. And he knew then it was, you know, he lost so much time then. I think he was sort of 40s or 50s at the first split, wasn't he? Right. He was quite down at the first split. And then after that, he just went for it again, thinking, right, well, I'll just see what I can make of it. And it snowballed, you know, mistakes kept coming. And, it was one of those runs where I think he was glad to get to the finish line, really. It didn't go right for him, but certainly it wasn't for the lack of trying.
He's been so consistent over the last two seasons. Is that something you've really focused on since he joined Madison?
I think we try to be consistent with the support we give him to help him sort of go through a process that's consistent for him and works well. But I think that's just Danny, and that's why he's so good. He's ridden from being very young. He's confident in himself. He's got the ability to win on any day, really. And when you see how much effort he puts into that, you can see why it happens. It's not just natural ability. It's all the hard work he puts into it, really.
And he's fifth in the overall at the moment.
That's right. Yeah, unfortunately, he dropped one place with that sort of not getting any points in Leger at the last World Cup.
But he's won in Val d'Isère. He's won in Lenzerheide. Do you think the Leger results put him out of the overall?
Out of winning the overall, it'd be tough. But mathematically, it's still possible. And if it can happen to Danny, what happened in Leger, then it can certainly happen to the others. You know, I mean, there's talk of the French all sort of been on a bit of an up at the moment, but
it won't last forever, will it?
It's one bike race away from, you know, things go wrong. It's sport. We've just got to make sure we try and help Danny get things right. So we can't worry too much about what everyone else is doing. You just have to go to each race now and make it the best we can and add the points up at the end.
Onto the bike a little bit.
Yeah.
All three of your elite riders had different bikes at Valnord. You had Danny on the Mullet, 29er front, 650B rear with the floating brake. Matt's on full 29 with the floating brake. And Alex is on, is he on full 650B without the floating brake?
No, he's not now. He's now on a 29 front, right, 27 rear.
But without the floating brake.
He didn't have the floating brake on, no.
I'm guessing there isn't a kind of clear advantage to one system. Is it down to rider preference?
For our team, we're lucky with the bike we have, that we have a 29 and we have 27.5 option. And then we were able to make small changes with the linkage to make that set up with the mullet option or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. So Danny tested actually from the second we left the World Champs. Danny went to Vancouver last year and rode out there with a 29er. And he rode that all the way through to testing in Portugal in January. And it was then that I said, you know, we've got these linkages. Let's look at that option. And I think as soon as he got on it, he realised that he was compromising his riding a little bit with the 29, just because of his size, just that little bit, and how he rides. He's quite, you know, quite animated because he's a slightly smaller rider than some of the big guys. And he got on it, and he never went back on the other bike after that. So it literally was a case of we'd got that bike working well for him. It really suited him, and he could tell it was going to be the best fit for him. Matt's a little bit taller. He's actually ridden that 29 since the very first prototype, going back when he was a junior. From I was like Mount St Anne when he was a junior last year. So he's just ridden that, likes it. No reason to make a change as far as he was concerned. So.
And you?
I haven't been back on anything smaller than a 29er front and rear, but I'm going a little bit slower. I found when I really push on, I do get the rear wheel in my backside, but right, I don't really ride that fast anymore, so I can get away with it, and I do feel like I get the benefit of the bigger wheels, yeah.
So talk us through the floating brake. It's a design that's been around for a few years. I remember seeing them on a Kona Stab, I think. What does it do for you?
Well, it's the technology that they were doing it for. It's similar, but we're a little bit more moved on than that. And it's not something that we've put on with an idea to it becoming a production thing,
right,
or anything like that. It's just part of the development of our frame. I know as soon as we put it on, I was expecting and I was waiting for, oh, that's not a new idea. I was just waiting for all that. And we know what we're doing. We know it's part of the development of the bike, part of the process we're going through to work out if we make any changes, where we go next and things like that. So it's just helping us at the moment. There's certain tracks where we want to get grip as we're braking. We want to get grip and braking bumps from fast speed down to low speed.
Yeah.
It just helps keep the bike in a straight line when you're braking and you're hitting braking bumps. So it helps us with that a little bit, but it's a little bit different to the Stab and those other bikes that had literally just an arm and a brake, because we do still have some control of how much it is allowing the bike to sort of work properly for us or go through its travel and everything else. So we do have some control of what it's doing, but yeah, it's not something that obviously it looks quite it is a, you know, a big CNC manufactured thing, and it's a neat bit of kit, but it's not something that we're looking to put into production. It's something to help the lads just find that extra tenths.
Danny and Matt requested?
We've been looking at how we could help them with that. It wasn't really an issue, but I'd watched a lot of videos over the winter and at the start of the year, and we could do, I think Mount St Anne was a place, and obviously that's World Championships coming up, and I wanted to see what we could do to help them there. And if you think, I think sort of the middle of the track, there's a really fast section and they brake extremely hard into a right-hand corner, and it's big braking bumps. And I just noticed that the bike under braking hard didn't work as well as it could. I mean, it's something that you or I would never even not many times that a rider buying one of those bikes is going to go from 45 miles an hour to 20 in about 10 meters. So but for those boys, just to have something like that we could develop through to having the best bike that we can for them for World Champs, that's where we're at right now. And then beyond that, the development we can make on our rear end, changes we can possibly make to a production bike to, you know, so everyone can benefit in some way.
And have they had to change their riding at all? I imagine the braking points are a bit
Say the braking points a bit more, and straight away when he said it, my response was, is that something that's just you'll naturally do, or is that something you're gonna have to think about? And if his reply had been it's something I'll have to think about, then I would have taken him straight back off. But within, you know, I think he rode it twice and then he not mentioned it again. You know, he just noticed that, which was good, because that's part of the desired effect, really.
Talking about braking points, I shared a gondola with you guys up at the National at Fort William last year. And we were going past, in the middle section, there's a tight left-hand corner with slabs around it. And Danny kind of looked out the window and went, I'm having to brake there now. And we had Jack Redding on the podcast last week. And he said, I asked him how fast he rides the top section, how he does it so fast. And he said, well, I brake in two places, but I don't think Danny brakes in any. Does Danny know like how many times he's braking? If you show him a bit of track, can he say, I brake there and I brake there? Is that how precise he is?
He'd be able to tell you where he's braking and where he's not, definitely,
And Matt the same?
Probably. Because I think when we walk a track, you know, you look at what line you're going to take, you look at where you're going to need to brake to set you up. And once they've done a few runs, they know how much they need to brake. But that's just something that happens naturally. But if you said to a rider, are you braking there? They'll definitely know.
How important do you think data logging is for the World Cup tracks now? You had Dave's system last year for the whole season. Do you not need it now because you know the settings for each track roughly, or have you got a different opinion on it?
There's definitely a place for it, and at the moment we're not ready for it, and we don't have someone who can read it properly. We didn't ever have anyone who could read it properly or had the software to read it properly.
Right.
That's moved on slightly. There are other teams that have tried that system and had their problems with it. At the moment, though, for us, we have a nice little process that we go through. The lads have a good feeling for the bike. They've ridden that bike now. I mean, Matt's been on that bike since he was a youth rider, so or different variations of that bike since he was a youth rider. So we're quite happy with how we go about it and the process to getting the bike the best we can. We've got Fox suspension at every single race. We have their factory support, so their knowledge and the rider's feedback gets us to a really good place. It was, I don't think at any point we used the data last year to gain an advantage for Danny. That wasn't really the case. So for now, for us, it's a complication rather than something that's going to help us.
Let's talk a little bit about World Champs, if that's okay. Danny's first World Champs win, it was in 2011, which I believe was his second season on Giant. His second World Champs win was in 2016, which I believe was his second season on Mondraker. 2019 is his second season on Madison Saracen. Has it been mentioned?
No. You're the stats man on that one.
All right. Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Fast forward to Mont Saint Anne. For the first time in a few years, Worlds are before the last round of the World Cup. Do you prefer it when World Champs is last race of the season?
I don't think it'll make a lot of difference because at World Championships, the riders all, it's that one race, one opportunity to be world champion, and that means enough to them that they'll all go for it regardless of whether it's the last race or there's a World Cup the weekend after. You know,
even if there's two or three that can still win the World Cup, still put it on the line for champs.
I believe they will, yeah. And I believe even if they tell themselves they're not going to the second they come out the gate, that goes out the window, because that goes out the window even for me. That went out the window for me on Sunday. I left the pit saying, don't worry, I know I've got to drive the truck on next week, and went up there and came down annoyed that things had gone wrong.
You see, that's my problem.
If it didn't matter to me, then I wouldn't have been too upset for 10 minutes that it went wrong, but there you go.
That's my problem, I think. I sat on the start line and went, ready to go home now.
Just got to get down, then I can go home.
I had James Hughes set off in front of me.
Yeah.
And I watched him attack the top section.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, I can't do that.
I think if you'd have asked me at the top for any advice, I'd have said, don't watch James Hughes go down straight if you're behind him. Yeah.
When you signed Danny, he was already a two-time world champion. Well, what was the main reason for the signing? Is it exposure of Saracen? Was it to help develop younger riders, to improve on an already race-winning bike, or all of the above? Or?
I think, when I first came into the Madison team, it was more young development riders, and we still very much do that now.
Yeah.
But I sort of had, we all had the aspiration to try and move it on and take British riders from a certain level up to the top. And I think if you want to do that, you need to have someone there to inspire the younger riders. And it had taken a while, but I think we got to a point where the bike was ready, the team was ready, the team staff were ready, and we wanted to move the team on to that level. And also, we'd talked probably for 2 years about trying to find a top 10 rider, and nobody really that fit the bill was available.
Yeah.
And then I've sort of known Danny for a long time. We go back a little way, and we knew each other, and we'd talked a little bit about it, and it just sort of evolved into an offer, really. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. You've run a successful downhill project for how many years now?
I've been doing the Saracen team for 7 years now, seven and a bit. Yeah.
And like you say, you've brought some amazing junior riders through, Manon Carpenter, Matt Walker. Could you see there was, you know, at that early stage that there was going to be future world champions?
Yeah. Well, I came in actually. Manon was already, she'd have gone, she was into first year elite when I came into the team. So that part of it was, you know, that wasn't really my doing through the junior side. But certainly from seeing her ride previously, you could see that she had the ability there. And then when she went on to elite, the same thing really. You could just see that she was at a level where she was going to be competitive at the World Cup races. With Matt, I think going back to Matt, when we picked him up as a development rider, we had Matt Walker and Jack Tennyson, who now does our photography for us. Yeah. So those two guys, you could just see the ability in both of them, and then Matt sort of found his feet and just found his way with the racing a lot better. But you could see the natural ability there. He was probably of the two, Jack was definitely putting in more effort, and he was a lot more disciplined.
Yeah.
But Matt just had that natural ability, which at that age go takes you pretty much all the way. It really does. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was our first season racing when those two just started in junior.
Right. Yeah.
And Matt did just seem to. He always seemed to have a couple of seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. It just suddenly clicked with him, I think. And then when you're young like that and you're flying, just that confidence thing again. The more good results you get, it snowballed from there for him. Really. Yeah.
And do riders develop then at different speeds? What can you do to unlock that potential?
Yeah, I think they do. You can see, I can watch riders and see just a natural flair for it, yeah. Or just the riding style is very natural. There's nothing forced or taught or anything like that. And even when a younger rider comes onto a team, I don't start overly trying to explain how to do things and what to do. You like them to sort of learn either from sort of just looking around at what's going on, especially in our pit. They have the benefit of looking around, and now sort of Jordan has the benefit of looking around and seeing what Danny's doing, seeing what Matt's doing, and finding his own way to make that work for him a little bit. And that'll happen, not so much this year, but the next few years as he goes through into junior, that'll certainly happen for him. So, yeah. And I think what I've always tried to do with Matt is just give him the security, knowing that we're not just sticking him in for a year or if he does well. I think one thing for juniors is you can get a good junior, they get a lot of attention, and then all of a sudden they've got all this attention on them and an expectation, and they're going like mad thinking that this is their World Cup opportunity for 1 year to prove that they deserve to be on a World Cup team. Whereas I said to Matt, the first year junior, I think it was, I said, look, I'm going to sponsor you into your first year elite, so you don't have to go into this season thinking you've got to ride the wheels off it and smash yourself up trying to prove yourself, because you know, we believe in you. We're looking long term at this, and I hope that helped. I think it did. I think it really helped him just go at each race and not have to think about anything but riding his bike, really. Yeah,
I think you see some of the juniors be so dominant or look so much like they're going to make a massive impact into the elite, like Finn was you know, and Matt, they were going head to head each week. Thibaut de Prella won the French nationals yesterday, and I believe he won the whole elite thing because he had the fastest time of the day.
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah.
How do you think he's going to get on?
I think he'll do well. I think he's on a good team there. He's got good support. He's got the benefit, as I was just saying, of older riders that are of a good level. So he has people to look up to, and he'll find his own way based on what works for him and what he can see those top riders around him doing. So there's no reason. You know, you can expect him to be around a little while, I'm sure.
Yeah. Would you expect him to kind of first couple of seasons dip a little bit, though?
They can do a little bit, and it's a very different thing being the best junior doing times that are up there with the elites to actually being in the elites and making it happen there. And then it's difficult because as a junior, you sort of ride on a bit of a wave. When you are a top junior, you ride on a bit of a wave, you get to elite, and it's like, oh, everybody's got what I've got. Yeah. Now it's time to put the effort in, time to put the work in, which is what Matt did through the winter, like the last two winters, and He's managed to drop himself into the top 10 in elite straight away, which is, you know, it's fantastic.
Incredible, so, You have Jordan Williams, he was second this weekend, and we think Dom Platt looks to be a rider with lots of potential. Do we have potential world champion riders coming through the ranks?
I think we do, yeah. I think we do, and we need to make sure that not just, when I say we, I mean British cycling, as well as the teams, need to really start looking after these riders. I know they're starting to do things with the juniors. They did some stuff for them in the week here. And we really need to make that effort, because that's one reason nations like France are doing so well at the moment. They've had that programme in place for 20 years or more, looking after their downhill riders, whereas we're so focused, British cycling is so focused as a federation, looking after Olympic disciplines, that downhill has gone by the way. And it's because it's been achieving, because teams like ours and the Athertons have been putting in the effort, looking after young riders, bringing them through, putting such good programs together, we've been getting the results, and they've been getting the pat on the back for it, or giving themselves a pat on the back for it. But they need to really, really step up now. They need to step up, and they need to look after these young riders, and make sure that these teams have got riders to pick from, rather than picking one and hoping. Yeah. We should have a pool of a lot of riders to choose from.
Yeah, Luke Williamson won yesterday.
Yeah,
he looks a real talent for the future.
Yeah, there's three or four now, and I see them, and they're not just good riders. You hear them chatting and you hear them talking, and they're not big headed. They're not crazy. They're not messing around. You can see they're quite focused young men. You know, they know what they want. They want to do this as a living. And I can't look after all of them. So I hope that British Cycling see the time and the money and the investment to help them get to a place where teams, as well as ours, want to take them on, you know.
Cool. Let's finish with
the Revolution Bike Park. Big questions.
Question number one: is there a Madison Saracen Fantasy League, and if so, who's winning?
No, there isn't. No.
No? I thought you boys would be right into that. Matt's a very, very reasonable 250,000.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he? Right.
Yeah. He was a great pick to have at the start of the season.
Right.
Second question: do you feel that shorter, lighter riders have an advantage in downhill? They have the same amount of tyre on the ground, lower centre of gravity, lighter weight to flick around. You can name on kind of one hand the number of tall World Cup riders.
It depends on the track.
So tight and twisty, they'd have an advantage. Yeah. Flat out, straight.
It's one that's been talked about before. I think Jonesy's done chatted about this before and dirt website and things like that over the years. But I think it's some coincidence involved. But I certainly see certain tracks that suit different riders. But then there'll always be one that'll blow that theory out the window as well. So, for example, Andorra, if it's wet in Andorra, a big heavy rider trying to slow the bike down to get around tight turns is harder than a lighter rider to do that. But then, you know, you've got someone like Greg that'll ride down there and kick that theory into touch quite quickly.
At Masters Worlds, we got one day of practice.
Yeah.
And it rained the whole day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I crashed 3 times in one section and just decided that's it, I've had enough.
Yeah.
The only person left riding was Mark Wakeman.
Oh, right.
Who came down at the end and just went, "It has been an honour to ride that track in those conditions," which is typical Wakeman, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, final question. What do your guys find hardest about being a downhill racer?
I don't know. That's not really a question for me, that one. I think probably the hardest thing sometimes, from my experience as well, from racing, is remembering that sometimes it's a job. And that's a difficult thing to do when you've grown up doing it and it's been just what you've done and what your family's done and it's been a hobby.
Yeah.
There comes a time when you have to also, you know, we all appreciate that what we're doing is, you can call it a job and there's a lot of people probably laughing out loud, but you know, the level they're doing it at and the focus they have to put into it, it's a full-time job and it's not a job you can even start at 9 and clock off at 5. Through the summer, it's 24/7, and if they want to do it, you know, they need to be in the same shape as an Olympic athlete and have the focus to win, just like any other professional sportsman. So it's a full-time commitment to your life, really. It's not just you're not choosing something that you can turn on and off and pick the bits you like and leave out the bits you don't. And I think that can be hard, especially for a young rider, because there's so much there. You know, you've got... There's a lot of riders you see coming through and think, oh, is it going to happen? And they get their driving license and go to the pub and then you never see them again. You know? So it's, you know, you've got good ones when they get through that period and they've still got their commitment there to it.
I think as well, one of the things we were saying this weekend that's quite unique about downhill is that there aren't many sports in the world where anyone can kind of turn up and compete on the same track at the same time as the best riders in the world. And I imagine that makes it feel even less like a job, if you see what I mean, when there's everybody else turning up on a weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we had a scenario last week as well where we're all in Ligier, and that's somewhere. So Danny and those boys have been going for holidays since they were little, riding their bikes, and they're sort of... I think Danny even said, I thought it was going to be a bit different here, but it's still kind of... So we've got to go and race down there, and it was a pretty, you know, it was a pretty daunting track. They're going flat out down that mountain. It was, that was a lot of pressure in a, you know, a proper World Cup environment where he's used to going there and having a holiday, you know. So that was something he had to sort of switch in his head a little bit as well, I'm sure. But
cool. Well, I think we'll call it there, as you've got a Madison Saracen experience day here to prepare for. I really appreciate you finding the time to do this. Thanks very much. And congratulations once again. And best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Fingers crossed we'll finish it off in style. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks very much to our sponsors, Hope Technology, Revolution Bike Park, who I have to say put on a great event this weekend, and singletrackworld.com. We'll be back very soon. Hope you enjoyed this one. And thanks very much for listening.